How's it going, guys? My name is Will Holdren. I'm the host of Willpower Podcast, and today we have a very special guest. His name is David Meltzer, and David Meltzer is the co-founder of Sports One Marketing, and he formerly served as the CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment Agency, which was the inspiration for the movie Jerry Maguire. His life's mission is to empower over 1 billion people to be happy, and this simple yet powerful mission has led him on an incredible journey to provide value. As part of that mission, for the past 20 years, he's been providing free weekly trainings, and now he's doing free Friday trainings. And at the end of this, I'll provide you guys the link so you guys can jump on to those trainings. So, David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Will, it's a pleasure to be here, and I love anything that has to do with Will and willpower.
I appreciate it. It's a pretty catchy name.
Great.
Yeah. So to start off, I like to ask all my guests the same question. So what motivates you to get out of bed every day to do what you do?
You know, the first thing is, you know, I distinguish between motivation, conversion, and inspiration. So motivation is the matter of getting up or getting started or getting back up or getting restarted. And what does that for me is meditation. I live my life at a higher frequency. I believe that my days are to plateau and grow, not to live the myth of Sisyphus where you push a boulder up to the top of the hill just to have it roll down in the beginning. So what gets me up in the morning is to enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, pursuit of my potential.
I love it. Honestly, that's a great, great purpose. And, you know, one of the great things I really love about your story is that, you know, you were a millionaire, you had it all, and then you lost it all. You hit rock bottom, and then you made it all back again. And you changed your whole mindset about how you want to help people instead of just going for those materialistic things. So can you kind of walk me through what that rock bottom was like, and how were you able to change your mindset?
Yeah, so you know what's interesting is I actually hit rock bottom 2 years before I lost all my money. And the reason I hit rock bottom was that I had gone from living in a world of not enough. I grew up poor with a single mom. She packed my dinner in a paper bag, worked two jobs, and I was a victim. Everything happened to me. Why'd everybody else have nice cars and houses and dads and things? Why'd they go to summer camp? And then I moved as a millionaire in my 20s, a multimillionaire in my 20s, into the world what I call of just enough. There was just enough for me where I was buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't even like. And then that shift happened when I realized that I needed to take stock in who I was. I needed to take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. I needed to live with one, gratitude, which gave me perspective to find the light, the love, and the lessons and everything. I have a saying that there's suck in everything, and you got to be able to find the light, the love, and the lessons in what sucks. No matter who you are, I've been blessed to be around the greatest celebrities, athletes, entertainers, billionaires, entrepreneurs, and all of them have suck in their lives, but they all have gratitude as well. The ability to find the light, the love, and the lessons in that suck. Forgiveness. I had to learn to forgive myself so I could give forgiveness to others. I was living in ego-based consciousness so much of the time, and I was in blame, shame, and justification all the time. The last third one was accountability. I needed to be in control of my own life and ask myself, what did I do to attract this to myself, and what am I supposed to learn from it? And then finally, this idea that gets me up in the morning, I went from a philosophy of I give to receive, where everything in my life was a negotiation, everything in my life was a trade. I believe that even money bought happiness. I believe that money bought love. But instead, I shifted that paradigm and I started thinking, what if everything came through me? Not in a world of not enough, not in the world of just enough, but a world of more than enough of everything for everyone that I could now receive so I can give. So I shifted my paradigm to create this abundant world. In fact, that led me to do my free trainings on Fridays for the last 20 years. It led me to be on my personal mission to empower over a billion people to be happy, finding 1,000 young people like you, Will, that will teach in your lifetime 1,000 more people to teach 1,000 more people to be happy. You know, 1,000 times 1,000 is a million. 1,000,000 times 1,000 is a billion. It doesn't seem too far off for guys like you and I to change the world, change the collective consciousness, create a happy world, a world of more than enough for everybody, more than enough of everything for everyone.
Right. And I think that is such a powerful motivation as well. Once you get to that point where you don't let your ego take over, but instead you genuinely want to help people. And, you know, what you said before is very interesting, because even in my life, Like at this point, I do feel like money, you know, is where, like what I need in order to be happy in life, in order to be successful. And I know that a bunch of my friends as well feel the same way, where, you know, I need that Ferrari to impress all my friends and my family, and I need to buy that home for my mom. And so, you know, it kind of, a lot of people make money sound like the root of all evil, but really it's just a tool that can be used for good or evil. And so I'm kind of curious, do you think that it's wrong to have a purpose of just getting money?
Not at all. Not at all. I believe in making a lot of money so you could help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. You're, you know, really fooling yourself. Money doesn't buy love or happiness, but what it does, it allows you to shop. It allows you to shop. And if you shop for the right things, like a house for your mom, for a community center, for the neighborhood, whatever it may be, if you shop for the right things, you're going to be super happy. If you shop for the wrong things, things to impress other people, things that you don't need, you're going to be unhappy. And you need to learn that for yourself. You need to experience it for yourself. But money to me is one of the primary focuses of my life. It's a currency. It's an object of the energy that I put into the flow to get what I want. And I use money to shop for the right things in order to be happy.
Right. And you were able to acquire that money at such a young age. Like you said, you were in your 20s when you actually became a millionaire. And that right there is very astonishing and astounding in itself, because a lot of people do want to do that, but they never are able to actually get to that point. So, I mean, what was just different in your life, and how were you able to, you know, manifest the entrepreneurial dream at such a young age?
Well, you know what? I believed in a mathematical formula, and there was two of them. One was how to use time for productivity, and the other is the mathematical formula of luck. So the mathematical formula of being productive was to look how efficient, effective, and statistically successful I could be. So instead of most people working 8 hours a day, I was going to be productive 16 hours a day. And if I could be twice as efficient with that time, it would be 32 hours of productivity. And if I could be twice as statistically successful by practicing and making it a profession of mine, it'd be 64 hours of productivity a day times 7 days, which equates to, believe it or not, 56 days of productivity a week, compared to most people that have 5 days of productivity. So after 9 months out of law school, where most of my friends had, you know, that normal 5 days of productivity for 9 months, I personally had worked 11 times that. So in essence, I had worked over 10 years of productivity. And that's why I always joke around, people like, oh my gosh, you're incredible. I said, I barely made 100 grand a year. I just did all the years in 9 months. And so I've used that mathematical formula. And the other one is the mathematical formula of luck. And that says what I pay attention to and what I give intention to creates the coincidences in my life, the luck in my life. And so I stick by that mathematical equation. I call it studying. So what I study with attention and intention create the coincidence. So I study what I have planned, what I don't have planned, and even my sleep.
Right. And I love that phrase where, you know, the harder you work, the luckier that you're going to get in the end. And that's honestly like a side and side of what you just said right there, which is so powerful. And I feel like a lot of people in their 20s, they get out of college, they get a job, that 9-to-5 jobs, they don't really have that opportunity to work 16 hours a day. So, you know, what would you suggest to them so that they could put all their passion, all their effort into actually, you know, building their own business, building their own brand without actually quitting their job?
Yeah. So what you really want to put your effort into, and what I did, was to put as much effort in investing in yourself. And yourself is your capabilities. They're divided into three areas. The number one capability that you have is your skills. So you want to put as much focus in on while you're at school, while you're at work, while you're at play. I believe in activity that I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. I don't believe in work. I vacation every day. I believe 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a Saturday. So I literally have that type of activity in my life. And I utilize my skills, number one, two, my knowledge. And there's a varying degree of knowledge. It's knowledge of things, places, all types of people. As much knowledge as you can gather, you could do that at any time with activity you get paid for and activity you don't. And then finally, excuse me, most importantly, your desire. The common denominator of all successful people is you must be what you can be. People that are successful, you ask what wakes them up in the morning, You don't have to ask a person that must be what they can be, what wakes them up in the morning. It's to increase and enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of their potential. The best celebrities, athletes, entertainers, the greatest billionaires and entrepreneurs all have a backbone of they must be what they can be.
Right. And that's also very powerful. And I, you know, I usually say this and I strongly agree with that. And, you know, I really think that so many people never actually fulfill their passion and their purpose that they always wanted to. And so many people are literally just dead by the time they're 50, even though they won't die until like 90 years old. But like, they're just dead like on the inside because they're not doing what they love. So, I mean, what would you suggest of like how people can find their passion and do it even though, you know, you're not going to see a great financial return right away in the beginning?
Well, I think, you know, taking a view of finding the light, the love, and the lessons of what you do. I don't believe people love what they do. I think you learn to love all aspects of what you do. And this is the shift in the paradigm, the perspective that you want. These lenses of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude will help you have that pursuit. And so as long as you're in the pursuit, you know, there's an old movie with Will Smith called The Pursuit of Happiness.
Love that movie.
Yeah, so Chris Gardner is a friend of mine. He's the one they made the movie about. Wow. And I always joke around with him. There's no such thing as the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is the pursuit. You can, if you're enthusiastic about what you're doing, enthusiastic means in theos, with the greatest source, God, energy, love, light, lessons, whatever you believe, you cannot be depressed. You cannot be anxious or dead, as you say. When you're in the pursuit, you are happiest. So what I teach people is to find the light, the love, and the lessons, to move that motivation into inspiration, to be in spirit, to be connected to everything, not just that source, but also everybody and everyone. A tree has no branches. One branch should not go to war or create problems or attack another branch. This happens all the time, and we create resistance, voids, and shortages because of it.
Right. Yeah. And again, that's very powerful if people can actually understand that and utilize that into their own life. So I kind of want to switch back into your business life for a little bit. So when you were on that high peak in your early 20s, when you made all that money and you had a wife at that time, you know, were you generally happy even though you haven't shifted your values to help people first?
So, you know, I was happy, but I was also in my own way, right? So I wasn't nearly as happy as I was when I was young, living with the core values that I had, and I absolutely wasn't as happy as I am today. I had a lot of areas of ego that would send me off into the wrong trajectory. So I had a need to be right longer, a need to be offended, a need to be resentful, guilty, angry, frustrated, anxious, worried, separate, inferior, superior. Just listing those out, you can imagine how much time, resources, and money I wasted, which interfered with what? My happiness. And so as I decreased the time that I spend with the needs that I just listed out, as I decreased those times, it just made more room for time to be happy.
Right, right. And I was listening to your interview with Tom Bilyeu, and you know, one thing you said was that your wife told you at that point that you have changed and that, you know, you really got to stop being so ego-minded basically. So, I mean, what did that do for you and how did you shift your life after that moment?
You know, for me, there's a book written, you know, Don't Take Yes for an Answer. One of the things comes with great success is a whole bunch of yes. One of the things that come with great success is a whole bunch of yes. Meaning when you're successful, people are afraid to tell you no, because they're not going to get as much out of you as they can. And so when my wife told me no, told me I wasn't as good as I thought I was, told me I better take stock in who I was and what I want to become, or she was going to leave or I would be dead, you know, from the track that I was on, you know, that was truly a catalyst in order to see and look within. I always tell people right now, look, all you cowards out there, look in here, right? That's what I did. I was a coward. Everything, you know, was for the purpose of buying things I didn't need, to impress people I didn't like. It was all out of insecurity and projection. Instead, I started looking within, taking inventory of my values, my personal values, my experiential values, my giving values, my receiving values, and living, you know, a disciplined and happy existence.
Right, right. And, you know, again, I think so many people, they don't actually look inside of themselves. Like they see what they think other people view them as, like, as successful, and, you know, sometimes it can be overbearing and, you know, egotistical, like you said. But you know, when people really learn to look inside themselves, they can see some things that aren't as clean as they would like it to be. And so in your life, I mean, you were able to shift to a point where you could give without expecting anything in return. And I think that is such a powerful thing that can create so much happiness in other people's lives as well. So how can other people learn to develop that mindset as well, where, okay, I'm going to help this person, I'm not expecting anything back in return? Because I think that is one of the most difficult things that anyone can learn how to do in life.
Yeah, two of the most difficult things is, one, to give unconditionally, and two is to forgive unconditionally, right? If you could forgive the unforgivable, and I'm sure you, even at a young age, Will, can think of circumstances that you'd be pressed, hard pressed to forgive someone if they did that to you. You know, the same thing holds true, believe it or not, with giving. You would be hard pressed sometimes to be able to give completely unconditionally, right? And we do that all the time. In fact, that's why people came up with loans, right? If people truly believe that we were all connected and they were completely abundant, they would allow everything to come through them for others. So if somebody came to them in need, there was no reason to borrow. You would just give it away unconditionally. Conditions are, you got to pay me back at this time, this interest rate. If not, this happens. And a lot of times conditions are, I'm going to give this to you, but you owe me respect, or you owe me thanks, or you owe me, you know, to be the favorite child, or you need to recognize me in some way. These are still judgments, conditions, and trading and negotiations that occur. So both forgiveness and giving are practices, just like quieting our mind is a practice. So everything that we talk about today that we're practicing to just get better, to spend less time creating the void, shortages, and obstacles that are unnecessary. I would say that forgiveness and giving are the means in which we unwind these untruths that we tell ourselves.
Right. And I think that's extremely important as well. But I also think that society has kind of, you know, moved away from that over time, and everything is about everyone, like individually, like, what, how can I get the best deal out of this? How can I get the most money out of this person? And like I said, that there's so many gurus out there that'll pay $1,000 for stuff you can learn on YouTube. And I really think that the morals are shifting and not everyone is on the same page anymore. I mean, why do you think that us as a society has kind of gotten away from that give without expecting anything in return, but instead are leaning more towards, how can I take advantage of this other person?
Well, I think it stems from the acceleration of scarcity. You know, as all these different things that we're learning in this socioeconomic system that we live in, it creates a world, like I told you, of either not enough or just enough, a scarce world where you're giving unconditionally. If you're confident there's more than enough of everything for everyone, why would you put a condition on what you give? Why would you negotiate? Why would you put terms on what you're doing? Why would you have attacking thoughts if you truly had faith? Right. And I'm a hypocrite just like you. I don't 100% of the time have complete faith. There's more than enough of everything for everyone. I'm living in this real world. Right. I'm practicing this just like you. I'm just older and more practiced at it. But, you know, it's a matter of abundance compared to scarcity. And there's a spectrum and a blend, and that more people on the spectrum are leaning towards, especially now with COVID and compressed times of uncertainty and the economy and the stock market and the housing market. People start thinking about what they don't have. And guess what happens when you think about what you don't have? You get more of what you don't have. I like to think of more than enough. And guess what I get when I think about more than enough? More than enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, I mean, the world is kind of in a scary place right now. And I really think that's taking a toll on people as well. And, you know, hopefully, you know, after this year, things can start, you know, turning on the upside. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it'll go. Trust me. Look for what you want and you'll get it. Vote for what you want. It'll be elected.
Right. So before we run out of time here, you know, what were some of the most powerful books that you have read? And, you know, can you just name some of them so other people can, you know, have a chance to look them up and buy them?
Yeah, absolutely. What a great place to end. So number one, my book, Connected to Goodness, changed my own life by writing it. And I know it's changed life by people reading it. Power of Intention by Dr. Wayne Dyer. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And the most complex text that I've read and do read every day is A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles, a less known text, but extremely deep and poignant for today, of how to live with peace and forgiveness in your heart and love, light, and lessons in your soul.
Awesome. That's really great. I'm definitely going to check some of them out as well. So,
perfect. If anybody wants my book, by the way, I'll send it to you for free. David@dmeltzer.com. Same place to register for the training. I have a TV show trying out if you want to pitch your company to me. All of that's free. I also have a text number, 949-298-2905.
All right, there you go, guys. So is there anything else you would like to say real quick before we head out?
Like I said, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. I promise you happiness will be on your side.
Man, that is the key to life. All right, guys, there you have it. David Meltzer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Will. We'll talk to you soon.
This episode was sponsored by Ruben Alvarez from In for the Kill podcast. Check out his YouTube channel for product reviews, mindset videos, and interviews. Hey. No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing